Hi, I'm Shumit Paul Chowdhury. I'm a journalist, a former editor-in-chief of New Scientist magazine, and I'm here to tell you five remarkable things I learned while writing The Bright Side, my book on the psychology, philosophy, and practice of optimism. Let's start with the psychology and the first of the insights I'd like to share with you. Insight one, optimism is universal. And I do mean universal. Optimism isn't just a human trait. Researchers have found that a wide range of animals also tend to view the world in a positive light. That includes some of the animals we often regard as clever, like monkeys, dogs, and dolphins, but also some you might find more surprising, like sheep, chickens, and even bumblebees. You can find this out by doing essentially the same experiment as you do when you present a person with a glass of water and ask them if it's half empty or half full. All of these animals, and many others, behave as though it is half full. Humans are animals too, so you might reasonably expect us to share this positive bias. But we're also more complex than other animals, or at least we like to think we are. So psychologists have developed a variety of ways of assessing human optimism, ranging from simple Q&A tests to state-of-the-art brain scans. Those tests have different implications for how we look at the world, but they all point in the same direction. Optimism seems to be the default state of humanity. When it comes to our own lives, we tend to assume that bad things won't happen to us, but that good things will. Insight 2. Optimism is beneficial. Of course, it can't always be the case that good things will happen to us and bad things won't. If we stop to think about it, we know that bad things do happen to good people. Charmed lives are the exception, not the norm. On the face of it, that presents a puzzle. Why is it that psychologically healthy humans hold views of the world that fly in the face of the evidence? We usually believe that mistaken beliefs are ultimately detrimental, but in this case, the mystery deepens when you learn that high levels of optimism are associated with longer life, better health, and greater success. This supposedly irrational view of the world seems to be positively beneficial. So how does this work in practice? There are several potential mechanisms by which optimism might help us to thrive and succeed. One of the ones I find most compelling is that it's motivational. If we're open to the idea that the future is full of possibilities, we're more likely to keep trying to improve our lot, and thus to discover new opportunities to do so, including ones we didn't previously know existed. Consider this simple parable. Two mice fall into a milk churn and are trapped and unable to climb out. One, overwhelmed by despair, accepts what it believes is inevitable and soon drowns. The other continues to kick and thrash until its relentless efforts eventually churn the milk into butter, allowing it to scrabble to freedom. The first mouse fell victim to a pessimism trap. It didn't believe that it could escape, so it didn't. The second mouse was an irrational optimist. It believed it could succeed despite the evidence, and so it did. Insight 3. Optimism is not universal. So far, so good. We're mostly optimistic, and our optimism mostly seems to serve us well. But there's a problem. Our innate optimism relates to our own lives and extends to those close to us. But increasingly, we don't express optimism about the directions that our societies and countries are headed in. Survey after survey shows that Americans, like people in many countries, are consistently more negative about their society's prospects than about their own lives. People will tell you they're doing okay and that their communities are thriving, but they don't like the way their country is headed. This optimism gap, as it's been called, persists even when statistics apparently show that actually things aren't so bad after all. But this isn't really a question of right and wrong. The way people feel about their societies affects the way they behave. Concerns about economic downturn make our businesses struggle. Fear of crime makes us withdraw from public life, and suspicion of waning moral standards makes our communities wither. The optimism gap starts turning into a pessimism trap. We persuade ourselves that there aren't any solutions to our problems, or even that when we have solutions for our problems, we won't be able to make them work. If we want to address that, intuition isn't enough. We have to bring our intellects into the picture. Insight 4. Optimism is about possibility. People have wondered for millennia what kind of world we live in. Is it basically kind or cruel? Is there some sort of hidden order behind human affairs that means things will almost always more or less work out? Or is it all just sound and fury? Is there some combination of social development, economic management, and technological innovation that will unlock continual progress? In fact, the original meaning of optimism came out of just such a debate in the capitals of Europe in the 18th century. The great German polymath Gottfried Leibniz proposed that the cosmos was arranged optimally, that we live not in a perfect world, but in the best of all possible worlds, meaning the one that was most harmonious and logically consistent. And those who held this view were optimists. The French satirist Voltaire was not one of them. He wrote a vicious parody of Leibniz into his 1759 novel Candide, or Optimism. As one Dr. Pangloss, who insists that all must be for the best, in this best of all possible worlds, throughout many dire trials and tribulations. It was hardly a fair critique of Leibniz's thesis, but it stuck, and optimism has carried connotations of naivety and delusion ever since. I think, though, that Leibniz was onto something. As the example of the mice in the milk churn illustrates, optimism is about an openness to possibilities, and human beings are uniquely well equipped to evaluate possible worlds in extraordinary depth and detail. Insight 5. Optimism is practical. One of our greatest gifts is the ability to conjure up scenes that we never experienced or that have never even happened. We can imagine great historical events just as readily as we can the wonders of the far-flung future. And what's more, we can imagine what might have happened if things had gone differently, or how things might turn out tomorrow according to what we do today. Of course, our imaginings aren't always accurate. In fact, they're often way off. But we've developed powerful technologies that allow us to put them on a more constructive footing. Models that allow us to predict the weather or the climate. Evidence-based scenarios for how world events might play out. Simulations and speculative designs that let us experience potential futures. These all help us to chart a path through the possible worlds we might inhabit someday and navigate our way to the more optimal ones. Powerful though these technologies are, though, they're not the most important thing about 21st century practical optimism. Most of the challenges we face are collective challenges. I can't solve, say, climate change all by myself, and nor can you. I may be optimistic that we can solve our problems, but if we are to solve them, we all need to be optimistic. If we are to put optimism to work, we need not only to practice it ourselves, but to assume that others are practicing it too. Or, to put it another way, we need to be optimistic about optimism.